This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, along with my board operator and cohort station operator manager, David Moxley. David, I hope that you and all of our listeners had a very happy Easter, and those who are still celebrating Passover had a and are still having a wonderful Passover.
And it's nice that it's spring break and traffic's eased off.
Oh, yeah, that's always a great benefit of spring break here in Atlanta. I'd like to just remind everyone that the Doctor's Lounge is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is our organization that has been supporting and fighting for the doctor-patient relationship and healthcare freedom for all Americans. So I would encourage all of you to go to the website, www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, and contribute, help us to continue the fight that we have been waging on behalf of all patients in America. I'm going to get right to our show today because there's a lot of ground to cover. I'm excited to have as our guest today John Graham from the National Center for Policy Analysis. And John is here to discuss with us today some issues that are very relevant and timely, notably the doc fix. Before we get into our conversation, let me just introduce John. John is a very has a very impressive resume that goes back to being the director of healthcare studies before he was at the NCPA. He was at the Pacific Research Institute with our friend and someone who was a guest on our show previously, Sally Pipes. And he was the executive director of the Benjamin Rush Society, now the Benjamin Rush Institute, which is now headed by another good friend of ours, Beth Haynes. John is an economist by training. He's an MBA. He has worked for some of the most impressive financial institutions in the world, and he comes at the healthcare issues from a little bit different slant than either I or my co-host, Dr. Karucha, come from it, which is from the boots-on-the-ground, actual practicing physician standpoint. And the most interesting thing I found from John's bio is the fact that he jumped out of airplanes at one time. So John, welcome to the Doctor's Lounge.
Thank you. I didn't land on my head either. I managed to land on my feet every time.
Excellent. Well, we're everybody is very glad to hear that because you really helped to add a lot to the healthcare debate. Let's jump right into this, John. You've been on fire about this SGR fix, the sustained growth rate fix that has passed the House and also known as the doc fix.
Yeah.
And you comment this, as I said in my intro to you, about you, with a little bit different slant. You comment this with a healthcare economist point of view, whereas I come at this from a practicing physician point of view. So tell me and my audience what's going on, why is what has happened so bad?
Well, thanks for the opportunity. I think it's really important that the doctors out there who are actually practicing out there in America. I'm in the Washington, D.C. beltway, so I'm almost in a foreign country from America, right? That the doctors out there who are busy seeing patients understand what's actually happening with this doc fix. The doc fix, of course, refers to the problem with the sustainable growth rate, or SGR, which was first instituted in 1997 and is supposed to be a formula that governs the amount that Medicare pays doctors. And the formula is poorly designed, it's inadequate, and as every doctor in America knows who sees a Medicare patient, if that SGR formula was allowed to apply, the payments would go down by about 20%, about one-fifth, and that would not make it doable to see Medicare patients. So at least once a year for since the early 2000s, Congress has had to put on these short-term patches, short-term fixes, to boost the payments to doctors above that rate. And it's a very frustrating experience. Doctors are always nervous that it won't get done in time and that they'll suffer a big pay cut from Medicare. And this level of frustration has been building and building for many years, as you know in your practice and your colleagues know in their practice. So there, this level of desperation led to a doc fix bill that we saw in the House in March that I think the word out there in the physicians community may be, hey, that problem is going away. That whole thing that we're going to fall off the cliff is going away forever. And that's all they've heard. And they haven't seen all the strings attached in this bill, which imposes a heck of a lot more federal government control of the practice of medicine than we've seen even in Obamacare. And I think doctors need to learn more about it and act quickly. And here's why, Dr. Schertz. This is critically right now because we didn't even know this bill was coming through. It came through the House of Representatives on March 19th. We first learned about it, and they voted on it on March 25th. And, of course, that cliff, that SGR cliff, hit on March 31st. We're already kind of operating without a contract in more generic terms. And Medicare has said we can keep paying doctors according to the current scale until the 15th of April, but then we're going to have to scale it back. So the pressure is on the Senate to just pass this bill really quickly. Now, I don't lobby or anything like that. I understand that there are some concerns in the Senate, and they want to see some fixes in this bill, and it would be very good if they did and get rid of some of the real problems in this bill that I think make it a really bad fix.
So, you know, you mentioned that we didn't know what was in it. And just so that everyone understands, this bill was pushed by organized medicine for months because they had just tunnel vision. They heard repeal of SGR, which has been something that has been their major goal since it was actually instituted, and because it's just been such a bad leftover from the balanced budget amendment in 1997, but some sources which I in the House, which I can't reveal, have said to me that this bill is no different than the bill that was voted on last year. And that did not pass. So did we miss the boat, John? Did we not pay attention last year? And have we now lost the opportunity to really stop this in its tracks when we could have done maybe a better job if we would have been on this earlier?
Well, I don't think it's our fault. You know, I think it's the politicians' fault. There was last year a lot of really good work, and solving this problem takes a lot of work. It's not a no-brainer. So there were three committees in the House, and some very good physician legislators were involved. It was all done openly. There was committee hearings last year, and they were grinding it out, you know. And they had some problems with paying for the cost of the fix, and, it, you know, reforming Medicare is not something you just do at midnight and say we're done. And because it was so, they got so close last year, and they worked so hard at it, and they were so exhausted by it, this year what happened was in the committees, I don't know if your audience wants to be sort of ground down in the minutiae of how the House does its business, but really good, you know, Dr. Price, who's from Georgia, is now the chairman of the Budget Committee. They worked out a really good budget resolution. You know, other committees were working on other things, and the doc fix bill never came up yet in the new Congress. What was happening was the Speaker, John Boehner, and the Minority Leader, Nancy Pelosi, were secretly planning with all these lobbyists from the healthcare industry to kind of drop it in quickly, and that's what they did. They just announced it on the 19th of March, and within a week, without any committee hearings, without any discussion, It just went to the floor of the House. The debate was no debate at all. They just, you know, Mr. Boehner praised Mrs. Pelosi for her bipartisanship, and Mrs. Pelosi praised Mr. Boehner for his bipartisanship, and then everybody voted for it.
It's a mutual love fest, wasn't it?
Exactly. Now, is that shades of Obamacare, right? Maybe
exactly.
We should read the bill before we vote for it. Doesn't that remind you of something like that?
That's exactly right. So you mentioned lobbyists, John. Who tell us who benefits from this?
Well, I think if you are someone who's comfortable in an office in D.C. and you like dealing with the Medicare bureaucracy and you like calculating formulae and ways of how a government bureaucrat thinks doctors should be paid for quality and doctors should be paid for value, you're going to benefit from this. Because what we have in here, there's language in here. When I was reading the bill, I thought they just plagiarized this out of Obamacare, you know?
Yes.
There's all this stuff about we're going to figure out new ways to pay doctors for value. And they've even got new acronyms, right? I mean, I know you doctors love it when the government rolls out a new acronym that's going to dictate how you practice and how you get paid. So we've got a couple of new ones here. One is called Merit-Based Incentive Payment System, MIPS. And another one is called Alternative Payment Model, APM. So you can add these on top of your ACO and your this and your that. And so how are they going to figure out merit-based incentive payment system? Well, they've got a big kind of black hole in the bill, right? And this is going to govern all these cash flows that are coming out through the Medicare Part B payment system to the doctors a few years in the future. So just like in Obamacare, it says, well, the Secretary of Health and Human Services shall determine, you know, what the heck a merit-based incentive-based payment system looks like. And there's some language in the bill that it'll go to you know, the specialist societies and other representatives of physicians will have input into determining the quality measures and the value measures. But I think you doctors who are out there in America practicing are going to have to keep a very close eye on the people who say they represent you inside the Beltway, because these guys just love to get into the bureaucracy and help them write, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages of regulation governing how you folks practice medicine and how you folks get paid. And this really doubles down on a lot of that stuff we saw in Obamacare about the Medicare bureaucracy determining what is value and what is quality instead of the patient and the doctor deciding what is quality and what is value.
You know, John, you've written a lot about this over the last month in Forbes and on your NCPA blog, and I was struck by the comparative quotes that you included in your Forbes piece about have the House Republicans cast their first vote for Obamacare.
Yeah.
And you had side-by-side quotes, Paul Ryan and President Obama. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is quite amazing. I mean, this is what really kind of irritated me about this is people who should know a lot better, like Paul Ryan or John Boehner, were making statements about how this will, we're finally going to fix the Medicare system in terms of paying for quality versus quantity. So Mr. Ryan wrote an op-ed in one of the newspapers here in Washington, D.C., and I won't read the whole thing to you, but he said, here's a couple of sentences, quote, right now Medicare pays doctors for every single treatment they perform with no regard for the patient's overall health. It rewards quantity, not quality of care, close quote. Well, and that he was talking about this bill we're talking about, this DocFix bill, and on the same day, President Obama made a speech celebrating the fifth anniversary of passing the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, and the president said, quote, we're moving Medicare toward a payment model that rewards quality of care instead of quantity of care, close quote. So you could put either of those sentences in the other politician's mouth, and it's pretty much exactly the same
sentence. Wow. Let's stop right there, John, for a break, and then we're going to pick it up from there. You're in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship.
I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak, co-host of The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. Please join us in the fight to save the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper and go to this website, www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. On Medicine on Call, we talk about more than medicine. It's about how to take control of your mind, body, and spirit.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. This is your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, with my special guest, John Graham, from the National Center for Policy Analysis. John, we broke off comparing the Paul Ryan and Barack Obama quotes on healthcare, which almost seemed interchangeable.
Yeah, and even redundant. I mean, if you do think, you know, that the Medicare bureaucracy is capable of determining quality and value for this nation of 330 plus million people stretching from Alaska to Hawaii to Florida, if you really think that they can stick their noses into every doctor's practice in this country and understand where the quality is and where the value is, then we don't need this law. Because Sylvia Burwell, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, has already said that the current law, i.e. Obamacare, gives her enough power over physicians. And she has stated a goal of paying 85% of all traditional Medicare payments to quality or value by 2016. And so people who support this kind of conceit, they should be quite happy with what they got in Obamacare. And people who oppose it should be concerned that Republicans, really for the first time in the House, have bought into this idea and are basically locking it in perpetuity.
You know, that's absolutely correct, and that's what people need to understand. This is a departure from the traditional fee-for-service payment of health care, where a patient receives service from a physician and actually pays for that service. Now, that's long gone because of the third-party payment system, and Medicare is the largest third-party payer in the United States. But what is absolutely astonishing is, again, a confidential source has told me that the majority of people in the Republican Party, in the same party that has championed patient-centered reforms, they want to see an end to fee-for-service medicine. They believe that we should change how physicians are paid and pay quality metrics and have the bureaucracy decide what constitutes quality and how physicians should be paid.
Yeah, it's amazing. And this kind of one-size-fits-all solution, there's actually a doctor who's in the Congress, you know, one of the physician members, who said that to me just yesterday. And we got to get rid of fee for service. And
did you ask him? Did you ask him why?
I shook my head.
Did you ask him why?
Well, quantity, not quality, the usual stuff you hear from everybody. And if people ask me, you know, as an economist and not a physician, you know, I always give a disappointing answer because they say, "All right, you're the smart economist. How do you think physicians should be paid?" And I said, I don't know. I'm not a physician. And when I'm a patient, I know how I'd like to pay. But, you know, Dr. Schurz has his practice, and you're down in Atlanta, right? And you've got your patients. I mean, how would I know how the heck you should be paid? That's absurd.
Well, if I'm a consumer, I can tell you how I would like to pay a physician, not wearing my doctor hat, but wearing my patient hat. I would like to be able to shop for the physician that I want. I would like to be able to know how much they're going to charge, and I would like to be able to compare physician prices, and ask around, you know, about quality, and let the market decide where I'm going to spend my money, just like I decide where I want to buy my car, or I decide where I want to, you know, shop for my groceries. And I think that, you know, in addition to that, I should be able to shop for other things as well, such as insurance, or I should be able to decide where I want to get my health care. I shouldn't have to be told that I've got to go to a certain hospital or a certain place for my health care.
Absolutely. And this whole issue of quality, you know, if you're not acting on price, if the patient can't say, you know, Dr. Schertz charges $1,000 and Dr. Smith charges $800 and Dr. Jones charges $1,200, if he doesn't have the price, he can't figure out the quality. You know, he has to figure out why is there a price difference. And so if you're not seeing the price, if the price is not transparent, there's no possible way that the patient can start figuring out where the quality is.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you how this also falls down, John, because if you have a physician, let's say, who comes out of training this June 30th when training programs end and goes into practice, they will be paid the exact same amount as myself, who has been in practice for 30 years, who has a certain amount of expertise. You can't sort out, you know, who is better by the metrics that we currently have. And these metrics make things worse because the metrics that have been put in place, and we'll get into that in the next segment, but the metrics that have been put in place are such that they perpetuate programs that were bad to start that are failing, and it strengthens them, like the meaningful use program for the electronic medical records.
Oh, gosh. We could go all day on that.
We certainly can. But that's you know, one of the metrics, and we will go into it, you know, in the next segment. But before we leave the Congress issue, and we were talking about Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan had a wonderful Medicare plan in the last Congress. What happened to it, and how did he sign off on this, and how could he reconcile that this is a good idea compared to what he had before?
Well, I don't see how he can reconcile. I sort of think of that. People of my age remember the original Star Trek, right?
Yes.
And there was one episode where they beamed in the transporter beam into an alternative universe where the Federation and the Enterprise were evil, and you had an evil Spock with a goatee.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that something happened. There's a transporter beam malfunctioned on Capitol Hill. And, this is what baffles me because, you know, the Ryan Medicare reform, as we call it, it doesn't mess with anything for people who are currently on Medicare. People who are today 55, 10 years short of Medicare, would go into a different system where they have a greater choice of insurance plan. And, you know, I don't think my Ryan reform is perfect, but it's like a million times better than what we got now and would really help solve some of the fiscal problems. So we've been very supportive of the Ryan Medicare plan. And he worked real hard on that. It took him like 3 years to convince the House Republicans that they should even look at it, right?
Right.
And finally they voted for it. And it's in the budget resolution. That's why this current doc fix is so unacceptable, you know, that in the House, they worked really hard. As soon as they met in January, Dr. Price, chairing the budget committee, started working on the budget resolution. And once again, they put the Ryan Medicare reform in the budget resolution.
Yes, they did.
And they worked really hard on that. They were up late night because they wanted it to be paid for. They didn't want to further drive us down this road to bankruptcy that we've been going on for so many years. So they've got a budget resolution, including the Medicare reform, that is fiscally responsible. It's going to start whittling down the problem we have with deficits. And you know, all that was going on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then all of a sudden, we have this completely opposite thing fly in, this so-called doc fix. It was never in this Congress debated in committees. It was never discussed. It was never read by anybody, and they voted for it. And it imposes this system that we discussed in the last segment of the Medicare bureaucracy, determining quality, determining value, in perpetuity, forever. And why would you want to do that when hopefully in 2017 with a new president, we will have the opportunity to make progress on real entitlement reform, including the Ryan Medicare reform?
So reading between the lines of what you just said, it would seem that if this bill passes the Senate, that it will entrench Medicare, the current Medicare system, and Obamacare deeper into the healthcare fabric of America.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. There's no doubt about it.
So, so people who are running on the claims that they're going to repeal Obamacare, you know, Ted Cruz is saying running around the country saying that if he becomes president, the very first thing he's going to do is repeal every single word of Obamacare. Hear that speech over and over again. That's fantasy if this passes, isn't it?
It's absolute fantasy, and I'm glad you brought up Senator Cruz because he's going to have a vote on it next week. It goes to the Senate next week, so hopefully we'll hear some dissent in the Senate, get some amendments proposed, and get something to slow down this train to some degree. Because you're absolutely right. This is a son of Obamacare bill, and I think that we haven't talked about the fiscal a lot. But I think that the fact that this cliff, the fact that doctors are not going to, you know, face this risk of having a 20% payment cut, I understand it's a great relief to doctors. But what we're talking about here is we're talking about increasing the payments by 0.5% overall.
That's nothing. It's nothing.
For a few years, and then it flattens out. I mean, I think even notwithstanding all this increase of Medicare bureaucratic power, within 2 or 3 years, you're going to hit the ceiling again, and the doctors are going to say, wow, even the doctors who are winning under this system, who somehow are able to game the system and get the higher merit incentive-based payments, are going to say, oh, you know, we're really not, we're lagging on inflationary, the cost of doing business is going up, the cost of maintaining our practice is going up. I think the squeeze is going to come up again faster than many doctors think.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this is the Ryan plan, and I'm not sure that everybody who's listening knows what the Ryan plan is, John. So maybe just briefly you can just say what the difference was in that plan.
Sure. Well, the difference with that plan is it makes it's very innovative because the risk of Medicare reform is first that seniors who are currently on Medicare like it. And that's perfectly understandable. So anytime you talk about Medicare reform, people who are on Medicare or near Medicare start having a kind of a meltdown. And politicians don't like to take that risk, right? You don't want to go into your district and have a bunch of, you know, grandmothers saying, what the heck are you doing to my Medicare?
Throwing grandma off the cliff.
That's absolutely, any politician knows that you don't go anywhere near that. So the Ryan Medicare reform doesn't do very much at all with the Medicare of people who are currently on Medicare or even people over age 55. It kicks in, if it were passed this year, it would kick in 2024. So people who are today 55, we can get ready for it. And what it does is it moves us towards more of a defined contribution model than a defined benefit model. Now, it's not, I'm overgeneralizing there, and it's not exactly a defined contribution, but what would happen is...
You know what, John? Can we just, like, hold it right here? We are on a hard break. So we'll finish up with the Ryan plan and then talk about some of the other fiscal aspects of this SGR fix when we return to the Doctor's Lounge.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, It seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back in the doctor's lounge. We've tweeted out information about this show, and it's the Twitter feed. My Twitter feed has been pretty much on fire. So if people have ideas about future shows or comments about this or any of the other shows, why don't you shoot a tweet at me? It's at Dr. Hal Atlanta, and I'd love to hear from you. John Graham is my guest from NCPA. John, you were going through the difference between explaining what the Ryan plan is and why that's better than this SGR fix.
Yeah. Well, maybe the best way to do it is talk about what currently exists. And many seniors, more and more seniors, are in something called Medicare Advantage plans. I'm generally positively disposed to Medicare Advantage plans. I'm not 100% sold on them, but yeah, at least there's less direct government bureaucracy involved. And many seniors I know are not sure whether they're in a Medicare Advantage plan or not. So sometimes I'll say, well, show me what kind of card you have, and it'll say Kaiser Senior Advantage or something like that.
Right.
Say, okay, you're in a Medicare Advantage plan. But what would happen, it would get rid of the old fee-for-service model, but what would happen is this is for people who are today 55 years old and under, if this plan were adopted, as they age into Medicare, if you're living down in Atlanta, for example, health insurers would compete to offer the plan to the individual, and the government would pay the plan the average of the bids. I'm not going to go into all that stuff, but anyway, there would be some price competition between the health insurers, and if I wanted the plan that won the competition, the Medicare would pay for that. And if I wanted a different plan that cost more, had more bells and whistles on it, I would pay more out of my own pocket. So you get more patient control over deciding the quality. Now, that's the quality of the plan. You know, if I were going to do one change to the Ryan Medicare plan, I would say, well, let's minimize the role of the insurer, you know, because a lot of people who are 65 now are very healthy. You know, they're not, you know, chronically ill, have complex stuff. I mean, they're very healthy. So they probably don't need a health insurer intervening in every transaction between the doctor and the patient. So if I were going to tweak the Ryan Medicare plan, I'd say let's try and minimize the role of the health insurer to when it's necessary. And for, you know, the healthy 65-year-old, let's just have the cash flows directly between the patient and the doctor. Now, that may be one step too far, but we got 10 years to figure that out. The important thing is that there's some competition between the health plans, which should keep costs low, and every individual will be able to choose between whether they want Aetna, Cigna, Blue, Kaiser, whatever. So it's a real big step forward, and the fiscal effect of it is just fantastic. I mean, it really helps solve the entitlement problem, according to the Congressional Budget Office.
You know, what we're really talking about is this SGR fix is not a fundamental change. It codifies suggestions or outlines that were enumerated in Obamacare, and it puts teeth in it.
Yeah.
And it's like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, as I like to say. And what this SGR fix really does, it memorializes or it strengthens some concepts that are all insurance company creations.
Yeah.
Things like pay for performance or some of the metrics that that doctors need to report on, which are looking at different standards or different metrics that the government decides on, that are going to result in physicians being assigned a score. And based on that score, physicians will get paid either a little more or a little less. And the problem is that most physicians are already overtaxed, overburdened by bureaucracy, and many physicians actually still don't have electronic medical records. And this is going to drive those who don't out of business because they're not going to get paid by Medicare if you don't have an electronic medical record. So what I'm really concerned about, more than just a change in just how doctors are paid on Medicare, this is a fundamental paradigm shift in how doctors are going to get paid, period. Because what happens in Medicare is the harbinger of things to come in the rest of the healthcare system.
Yeah, and the insurers are piggybacking on this a lot. I mean, they really like the electronic health record. You know,
that's right.
The Medicare bureaucrat and the health insurer are both on the same side of that because it allows them, you know, direct eye contact and you know, and a direct fingerprints right on as close as they can to what you're actually doing with the patient, and they can then pretend they know what you're doing is valuable or high quality or whatever, and it's. You know, what really is frustrating about this is I know the doctors out there know that these electronic health records have been very, very frustrating. And there's really the evidence in the literature on these is very mixed to poor. I mean, there's no real suggestion that they increase the quality of care. They just churn out a lot of information that a lot of different people can use, sometimes for not very effective purposes. And, you know, there's some physicians organizations who survey physicians, and physicians really speak with one voice on this. These electronic health records are not worth the money we spent on them. They're not really improving efficiency or quality of care or giving us good advice as to what we should do with the patient or anything like that. And one of the problems with this is something that I was looking at last year and this year, the federal government, of course, had these meaningful use payments, and this was $30 billion they spent. That's one reason why we put in these electronic health records that are not really very effective, is that the government effectively induced doctors and other providers to install these electronic health records with these bounties, these meaningful use payments. And now, of course, punishments if you're not demonstrating meaningful use.
Yes.
And a lot of doctors I've spoken to, I'm sure you've spoken to the same, they're so fed up with the electronic health record, they say, you know what, I'll take the punishment, I'll take the fine for Medicare, because, you know, just to pay the fine is less painful than trying to comply with the electronic health record.
Right. But in the new reality, though, that fine can be as much as a 10% decrease in already low Medicare payments.
Yeah, exactly. And this is another part that's frustrating about the SGR. The bill that they just put in, this DocFix bill, is that that's $30 billion that the government spent to have doctors install electronic health records. There's that money has been spent, so it's kind of like petered out. There's not much left to go. So we're sort of at a point where we could kind of start again and say that $30 billion was flushed down the drain.
Yes.
You know, in the scheme of government payments, it's not that big a deal. Let's just admit we kind of got that wrong, and let's start again.
It was like cash for clunkers.
Yeah, exactly. Cash for clunkers, yeah. So let's start again. I mean, I don't want to sound Jurassic or anything. I mean, obviously, effective use of health information technology is going to be good. But that can't be driven by the government saying, we certify the EHR and we're the electronic health record, and we're going to pay you for what we think the right electronic health record is. It has to come up from below.
Right.
You know, the government didn't decide what your smartphone should look like.
Correct.
They didn't say, you know, Apple and a few others are certified and others are not. So there's a good argument to be made, and I've made the argument that this $30 billion actually impeded effective adoption of health IT that would actually help the doctor and the patient, you know, do better.
That's right. As I like to say to people, if Apple came out with an electronic health record that actually made doctors' lives easier and allowed them to take better care of patients, there would be the same kind of lines outside of Apple as there are when they release the Apple Watch or the new iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. And I know a lot of those entrepreneurial companies in Silicon Valley recognize the opportunity. The apps, there's health-related apps for your smartphone now. And these guys who've not been in the health IT business but have been in the consumer IT business, they want to get into the health IT business. And then they see the bureaucracy and they see the size of the role of government and they say, oh, man, you got to be kidding me. They're blown away. And
right.
This is, so I was hoping before we saw this DocFix bill that whole experience of electronic health records that we've gone through, we could just kind of put that into the dustbin of history and start again. But no, this DocFix bill, part of these quality and all that stuff, the value-based payments, all this stuff, this Obamacare-type language, is reinforced in this DocFix bill, and the electronic health record is part of it. So they're just re-upping this whole electronic health record experience, and it's very poorly defined in the bill. But you're going to find the electronic health record burden is going to get worse and worse because the electronic health record is how you're going to demonstrate your quality and your value to get paid.
That's
and
right.
You're not going to be able to escape it.
That's right. It's one of the four metrics that this bill has enumerated, the others being clinical practice improvement activities. That's going to be decided by the specialty societies. Resource use, how you use drugs and how tests are prescribed. That means that a doctor like my partners who take care of adult urology problems, if they do PSA testing, which the government has already said is a very bad test, even though it reduces prostate cancer. But if you decide that you want to test for it and you do too many tests, that's going to you're going to be looked at unfavorably by Medicare.
And this is something we're starting to see, and it's a great concern. We've seen it in other countries, that when you start, the government says, hey, we're going to pay you for quality and value and all that stuff. The problem is the doctor has there's a perverse incentive there, right? The doctor says the easiest way to solve this problem is to see healthy people and not see the sick people.
Correct.
Right? Because the sick people demand more care, and I'm going to be punished for that.
That's right.
And it's very hard to get on top of that. In a regulatory bureaucratic regime, people are aware of that risk, and they try to solve for it, but, the only way to solve for it is more regulation, more bureaucracy. And it's really harmful to the very sick patient, the very chronically ill patient, the patient who needs a lot of care. Because, as you say, the doctor who sees that patient attracts the attention of the bureaucracy in a bad way, and they say, "Why are you doing so much test? Why are you doing so much treatment?" And it's the sickest, most vulnerable patients, I hate to say it, are the ones at the greatest risk.
So the winners in this SGR, as I like to create columns, winners and losers.
Yeah.
The winners of this SGR are the same winners of Obamacare, which are the hospitals are winners, the insurance companies are winners, the health IT companies are winners, the bureaucrats, the medical bureaucrats included, those who run societies are winners. The losers are patients. The losers are physicians, and the losers are fiscal conservatives. Do you have any other things to add to my list?
Well, I would say, anyone inside the Beltway, anyone in Washington, D.C. who has a nice job is a winner. Because, writing the regulations, lobbying the bureaucracy, we now are have a heightened need for that. Basically, if you wanted to be really general, if you're inside the Washington, D.C. Beltway, you're a winner. If you're outside the Washington, D.C. Beltway, unless you're maybe at Harvard Medical School or something like that, you're a loser.
Oh, cool.
That would be the easiest way to typify this.
How discouraging. Well, we are on our last break before we get to the final segment, so stay with us. This is Dr. Hal in the Doctor's Lounge.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge with my special guest, John Graham. John, just as a departure, how is the NCPA gig going?
Oh, great, thank you, great. We're you know, like I said, I was on the Hill yesterday on the Senate side trying to generate some interest in you know, stopping this freight train of the doc fix. The next thing on our plate, most of your folks, I guess the folks in your audience are very interested in healthcare. There's this Supreme Court decision, which we're going to learn about in June, July, King versus Burwell, which is about the future of the subsidies in the Obamacare health insurance exchanges. So we're working on a proposal to respond to that, depending on what the verdict is. And, you know, there's never a dull day in healthcare in America. But NCPA, you know, we just hired Alan West, the former congressman from Florida, as our CEO.
How is that working? How is working with Alan?
Oh, he's great. He's great. You know, he's got everybody knows him. Everybody likes him. Very charismatic, and he's leading us in some interesting new directions. I think I shouldn't. I don't want to preempt any announcements, so I don't want to scoop myself.
No, please.
But of course, being a former Army officer, he has a great interest in national security issues and things like that. And
is he done with politics, or is he happy settling in the policy world?
Oh, I think he's happy settling in the policy world. I know. I just got every time I see a list of possible presidential candidates, he's on it. But. I think if he was going to do that, we would have heard by now.
I know he's from Atlanta. I know he's from Atlanta. We would love to have him back and run for Congress from some of the districts in the Atlanta area.
No, we need a CEO. I think quash that. But you know, it's interesting. I was just thinking about you know, I haven't spent a lot of time in Atlanta, but I think what we you know, in a lot of areas like Atlanta, where you've got a you know, there's been a lot of growth lately and stuff like that. There's kind of a problem. I'm sure you're seeing it in Atlanta, but I'm seeing it in a lot of places like that where, you know, there's a big suburban growth area. You've got a small number of very dominant hospital-based health systems. Is that right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, and the problem with the small physician practice, we've seen this for a few years now, and I'm sure you've seen it in Atlanta, they buy up all these physician practices, right?
Yes.
And they do that because, you know, I mean, you know this better than me. The physician is just fed up with dealing with all the bureaucracy. The EHR is crushing them. So the hospital says, look, you just take our electronic health record and be done with it. And, you know, we're really losing that. You know, I use the term Marcus Welby MD. You know, we're losing Marcus Welby MD. And everybody's part of these closed hospital systems. And this doc fix bill is going to make it worse. It's going to maintain that trend. And, you know, when we were talking about, you know, what does the world outside healthcare look like, we're not in closed systems anymore. We're in open systems, you know?
Right.
And, you know, with information technology and things like that, you know, you shouldn't have to, you know, you shouldn't be concerned that your primary care doctor is going to, you know, refer you inside that closed hospital system. You know, the only way to ensure that he's looking after your best interests is to have him in an open system, and he decides what's best for you, best on your condition, not based on, you know, it's not just the Medicare bureaucracy, but the health system administrative bureaucracy that so many doctors are rolled into now, I think is becoming problematic. Would you agree with that?
I would totally agree with it. You have described Atlanta to a T, and we can talk about this, you know, over coffee at any time in the future. But the again, the what's happening in Medicare is a microcosm. It's a small part of what is to come in healthcare in general, because Medicare precedes everything, and the insurers are watching this with, you know, with incredible interest, because they want to jump right behind Medicare, right behind the government, and institute whatever happens. And things that we're seeing that are breakthroughs, and you know, in when you have an oppressive system, the smart people, the entrepreneurs, the people who are creative, seem to figure out ways around it. And and what this, I'm afraid, is going to do is going to squash some of that creativity. For example, I know you are, you know, very familiar with one of the new alternatives to healthcare delivery, direct primary care.
This
I'm afraid, will significantly set that back.
Oh, absolutely. And the direct primary care is a great thing, and I know that there are some different business models there. And you know, when people push me in a corner, I don't want to say, you know, like, I don't think it's my spot to say how physicians should be paid, but I do think that, you know, a direct primary care model makes a lot of sense, and a lot of patients like it, right? And they're paying their own money to go into it, so they must like it, right?
They absolutely do.
Yeah, but this will crush it, because the whole point of direct primary care is that, you know, the primary care doctor in that situation is the patient's agent, right? And the more complicated the patient's problem is, the more the primary care doctor should be able to take advantage of that open system I was describing, and say, you know, this patient has an idiosyncratic need. He needs to be referred to, you know, this specialist or that specialist or whatever, and not a closed system based on a limited number of very specific rules, but responding to the individual patient's need. And that's been growing. And, you know, one of the problems is that it's going to be increasingly hard to practice that, but also, you know, the patient... Well, you know, because our taxes are probably going to go up to pay for this, you know, unreformed Medicare doc fix and all that, that, you know, a very small number of patients are going to be able to say, look, I've got enough of my own income to be able to pay for that. And we need to go the other direction. You know, we need to get more of the healthcare money into the pocket of the patient so the patient can decide how he's going to pay for his way as he navigates the healthcare system.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. So, your time in the Senate yesterday, give us a prediction. What do you think will happen with this SGR bill when they reconvene next week?
Well, I never predict, but what I would hope for is we need at least some open debate. So, you know, there's none of that in the House. On the House, it was like Parliament in Pyongyang, North Korea. You know, they all just applauded each other, and they voted this bill through without any discussion, and it had not been debated in committees or anything. So I'm hoping that at least one or two or three or four senators will stand up and say, hey, let's not rush this through. Okay, the doctors are facing their payment cliff, so let's solve that problem for a few weeks so we can do that. And then let's get some open debate on the Senate, understand all the risks, all the costs of this bill, and solve this problem, especially this problem of increasing the control of the Medicare bureaucracy over physician, which no Republican should be endorsing in any way, shape, or form.
You know, one of the things, getting back to the Senate, and not to be wonky, but one of the and Harry Reid is now hopefully becoming a quick afterthought in the Senate, but he was opposed to this bill, just like you and I, but for different reasons. He wanted to see the Children's Health Insurance Plan extended not 2 years but 4 years. How do you talk to the people who are anti-chip?
Well, of course, when you say you're anti-chip, you're against health care for children, right?
Exactly. It's a straw man argument. Well, you can't win it.
I don't think we'll see that extended, because if they were going to have the Democrats wanted a 4-year extension of the Children's Health Insurance Program, and the House bill only had 2 years. So I think that, as this was negotiated secretly by Mr. Boehner and Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader on the Democratic side, if they were going to get the 4-year extension, they would have got that. So I don't think we'll see that brought up. But again, the problem with CHIP, we have this, you know, this is beyond our discussion of the Medicare doc fix, but, you know, if you're in a family, the whole family should decide what their health insurance package looks like. You shouldn't have, you know, one person on Medicaid, one person on employer-based health care, the kids on CHIP, granny on Medicare. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
No.
We have this fragmented system where based on your age, you're put in a different insurance plan, and based on your income, you're put in a different insurance plan. And even within a family, you can be put in a different insurance plan.
Right.
So that doesn't make any sense at all. And one of our longer-term proposals, our fundamental proposals, is an individual tax credit or a household tax credit. So the family as a whole can decide, this is what health insurance our family has, and we're going to keep it for as long as we think it works for us, and we'll keep it with us, whatever our job is, wherever we move across the country. And that would be make a lot more sense than just more welfare state programs into which we throw more money.
Wow, what a novel idea. Well, we keep coming back to the secret deal between Boehner and Pelosi, and all I can say is that I wish that people would have a long memory how people in Congress who have professed consumer-based, patient-centered reforms have acted in this Congress. And I wish that we could keep the heat on and make sure that things like this stop and aren't allowed to happen again. John, we're coming to an end of a great discussion. We could go on and talk about healthcare topics for another hour. I hope that you'll come back and join me on a future show. It's been great to have you today.
Well, hopefully this doc fix will be stopped and changed and amended, and we'll have the opportunity to talk about what a real doc fix should look like. So I look forward to that.
Absolutely, and maybe we'll be able to talk about the alternatives to Obamacare when the Supreme Court throws it out in King versus Burwell.
I look forward to it.
Me too. Thanks for joining us today, John.
Thank you.
I want to thank everyone for being with us in the Doctor's Lounge. Next week, my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchuk, will be back with you, and I'll be back here in 2 weeks. For now, keep up the pressure, keep up the fight, and do what you need to do to preserve your health care freedom. Thank you for joining us.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.